Okay, Shalom Aleichem. This is Tanya at G4. What do we call it? Wide open. And we finished chapter 3 last week, but there's a couple of points that we missed that I wanted to go back. Let's make sure my phone's off. That I wanted to go back and go over. So we were discussing the actual the structure of the Nefesh Elokis, really the structure of a soul. The soul is not like a huffy puffy kind of Casper the Ghost kind of, you know, touchy feely thing, which is what I always thought it was. Yeah, it's actually a highly structured entity. That's what it really is. It's an ordered energy. That's really what it is. So we started talking, everyone was familiar. We have Chochmah, Bina, and Das. That's the seichel, the intellectual faculties of the soul. And then we have, say, just Av and Yira, which is the emotional faculties. And that's really, like, so to speak, makes up the body of the soul. Obviously, it doesn't have any physicality to it, but it definitely has a picture to it. So that's the soul, and that's really every soul. That is the Nefesh Elokis and the Nefesh Bahamis, and there's different types of Nefesh, Nefashos, Nafshe Bahamios, I don't know how you say it, and they all are structured in the same way. So we started talking about the relationship of the Chabad, of the Moichin, of the soul to the Midas. And how it works is basically that what you think about, or what you understand, is what you will have emotions towards. So just on the most basic level, if I was to ask you right now, what are your feelings, what are your feelings to the thing going on in Chile right now? And I just made that up. I'm sure there is something going on over there. But your reaction would be, well, I have no feelings, so I know nothing about it. If I was to ask you, well, what about what's going on in the Ukraine, yeah, you might have a few more feelings towards it because you know a little bit more about it. And if I was to ask you about what's going on in Gaza and Eretz Yisrael, b'chule, then you would have much more feelings to it. It's much more personal, but just forget that it's more personal, that you just you know about the Inyan much more. So the relationship of your emotions, they are born from your intellect. If you don't know about something, you have no emotions towards it, as simple as that. And the more you know about it, forget the personal element, that maybe wasn't a good idea, a good example with Eretz Yisrael right now, but the more you know about something, the more you're available to have emotions towards it. So that's the relationship. So really it comes out that emotions are born from intellect. Without exception, unless you could maybe talk about the idea of like a physiological chemicals in the body and like physiological issues, didn't sleep enough, that could create kind of quasi emotions, let's say. But the way it basically works is that your mind gives birth to emotions. Yeah. Now, what the Rebbe talks about, he mentions his boinenus. We didn't speak about this bechlal, so I wanted to just go try and explain a little bit what his boinenus is. Yeah, so everyone knows what his boydidus is, yeah, where you basically seclude yourself and you speak to a boydidus. So what's his boydidus? Anybody has any
sitting
idea?
Sitting with Hashem, not talking. Isn't it sitting with Hashem without
talking?
That's
his
boydidus.
Introspection.
No.
Contemplation.
What?
Contemplation.
Contemplation, what do you mean by that?
You focus. Focus, meditate.
Introspection. Being present.
Introspection.
Mm-hmm.
This is a think deeply on one thing.
Thinking deeply about something. So the way to understand it is his boineness is from Loshen Boine, from Binyan. Yeah? And we actually mentioned just before the idea of building. So a good example of his boineness session. See, people translate his boineness as meditation. And that's fine, as long as you don't get it mixed up with like Far Eastern meditation, which is, it's not about clearing your mind whatsoever. It's the exact opposite. It's about using your mind in a very, like you said, very focused, but really a very, very, this is the word, methodical manner. Yeah, a very ordered manner. I will explain. It's good that you look confused. A very ordered manner that will allow you to experience emotions. Okay, so I've got a good example of it is as follows, yeah? Anybody knows roughly like how big the universe is?
Yeah.
or what they say, how big they say it is.
In a number, very big.
It's really big, yeah?
Yeah.
It's
like,
what?
A few hundred million light years.
And they say it's like 90 billion light years big, which you're like, wow. So that's like traveling at the speed of light, which is 186,000 miles a second for 90 billion years.
Big.
I mean, that's like
big.
That's like really, really big. Keep saying
biggest
that forever. What?
That's the biggest thing we know.
It's so huge. It's just massive. So let's ask you another question. Give me a word that you would describe, a word that pops into mind. Don't think about this here. Just shout out. Just blurt out. Yeah. A word that pops into your mind when I say blue whale.
Ocean.
Gigantic.
Water.
Tuna fish.
So usually what people say, you say gigantic, yeah? So usually someone will say big. Gigantic's going to prove the point even more, but you use the word big, yeah, at least for a blue whale. Yeah, they're like, they can be 30 meters long, yeah? They're huge. 30 meters is like, you know, three times the length of this room. Imagine a fish, it's not a fish, whatever, three times the length of this room, yeah? Its mouth is like the size of a double-decker bus in England, yeah? That's huge. So if you're using the word big for that, yeah, then well, how would you describe the Empire State Building?
Humongous.
Yeah, then what would you use? Then what would you say for Mount Everest? What would you say for the Pacific Ocean?
Relative.
You realize, but you're attaching these same words.
A small house is still going to be bigger than a whale.
But you realize we're using these words.
It's
very relative. But whenever you've got the word big used for something that's only 30 meters long, yeah?
It's the biggest of its kind.
But that word has already now, to call the universe big, you'll say, yeah, but it's relative, obviously, to call the universe huge. But you've already attached that word to Mount Everest. I remember I went to India when I was a kid. And I remember we went into the north, into the foothills, yeah? And I'm sitting, we'd walked up one of these massive foothills, yeah? And we're sitting there, and I'm just looking, it's just the sky, you know, just like, it looked like clouds. Yeah, just sky. It wasn't clouds, it was just sky. I'm sitting there, and I remember like going like this, and I go until my head was like that, and then I could see little peaks of snow at the top. That was the Himalayas Mamash, yeah? I couldn't even see. It just looked like sky in front of me. I'm sitting there like that, looking at the peaks of these mountains, yeah? They're just so big. The Pacific Ocean is just so big. When you start thinking about the sun, all these things are just... But we're all confused because we're using the same words for things that are actually very small. Like another example is that...
The Torah uses the word gadol for many things, though.
Absolutely. So, but this is to understand. This is what his boldness is. We'll get there. Give us a moment. That another good word is the word complex. Yeah, like if you were to smash open an iPhone, yeah, and look inside an iPhone, I think a word that would spring to mind would be complex or complicated. So I remember I had a guy come to my Shabbos table one time who was like a random guy, but. I asked you what he does for years. He was some kind of microbiologist. And I could hear how he was speaking that he really knew. He was a very, you know, you meet someone who you know who's really holding. So I just grilled him the whole Suda. And I was trying to think of like the most complicated thing I could think of, yeah? So I said to him like this. I said, what's more complicated, yeah? The entire world airport system. That's what I thought of. Yeah, like imagine how complicated the entire world airport system is. Yeah, with all the food and with all the luggage and with all the scheduling and with all the money, just unbelievable. Yeah, so I said to him, "What's more complicated, the entire world airport system, or one human cell?" And he like laughed, and he said, "It's not even apples and oranges. It's not even comparable in any way, shape, or form. One single cell in your goof." is so much more complicated than the entire world airport system that you couldn't even imagine the comparison between the two. And then I'm thinking, wow, I didn't say this, but I'm thinking, you're composed of like 50 trillion of these. 50 trillion of these, yeah? Of these insanely complicated little things, all working in absolute unity with each other, creating this goof that just runs itself, you know? And you're using the word complex or complicated for an iPhone. And we haven't got a word more than complex or complicated. It's extremely complicated. It's extremely complex. Do you hear what I'm saying? You're basically...
It's always in comparison to what's not. I mean, even whatever word you're using, it's comparative. Being compared, and the Empire State Building compared to, Mount Everest, it could be small.
It's tiny, exactly.
So it's just a matter of comparison. Yeah, you need a barometer to at least differentiate and then go forward or go back.
Absolutely, but you're being held, in a sense, captive by these words. You are, see, your words, and this is what his boinerness is. His boinerness is designed to break you out of this captivity, because when you're using the word rich for the guy who lives across the street because he's got like a BMW, yeah? And then you're talking about Elon Musk. It's relative, exactly. I have a friend in LA who's very wealthy, and he was telling me that he went to this, you know, Shabbos meal where he was like the welfare guy. That's how it's funny. He was the guy in welfare. It's all relative. But the minute you've got these words that are connected to different things, you're bound by the words. You haven't got endless words to go all the way. You with me? So it kind of binds you. What you're saying is you have to extract it from that meaning. You're right. You said that he's big. Now you have to extract it from that when you want to start talking about buildings. That's another level of big. But then you have to extract that when you want to talk about mountains, when you want to talk about oceans, when you talk about the solar system, when you talk about the Milky Way, et cetera, et cetera. But still, that word is still used for these very small things. So there's no way, so you don't get a feeling. When I said, this is the point, yeah? When you start talking about how big the universe is, and you say it's huge, it's tremendous, it's like there's no understanding it, it's so massive, yeah? Compare that to this, okay? Take a drop of water. This is his point of this, Shemaif. You take a drop of water, like a pipette, you know, and you squeeze it, and you have one drop, one single drop of water, yeah? Compare that drop of water to the entire Pacific Ocean. Now, there's some kind of ratio there, yeah? It's a mind-boggling ratio, but that drop of water has some kind of relationship to the entire Pacific Ocean, yeah? Now, take the Pacific Ocean, and now that is like a drop compared to a second Pacific Ocean. You with me?
We mean a second Pacific Ocean.
It's the ratio. So we took one drop. We took one drop of water, and we thought about it to the Pacific Ocean. Already, our mind kind of shorts a little bit. Yeah. Now we take the actual Pacific Ocean, and we multiply it by that ratio again, and imagine a next Pacific Ocean, and our mind is now already completely
bursting,
jellified. And let's do one more time. So that second Pacific Ocean to the third Pacific Ocean, yeah? I'm tingling. I don't know if you guys, that's happening to you, but I'm actually
compound
having
expansion.
A physiological what?
Compound expansion.
So however you want to call it, I'm having right now a physiological experience of this idea. Now compare the original drop to that third Pacific Ocean. That's the relationship of planet Earth, so I'm told, to the universe. That's called his boinerness. His boinerness is layering concepts on concepts which allow you to break free of the confines of our meager words. It's called the handle from the axe comes from the forest. How do you break out of the constriction of words? Is by using more of them in a very intelligent way. That's his boinerness. So his boinerness is not just this idea of just sitting there, and that's why it's called the godless Hashem. Why he in the Sefer over and over he talks about the godless Hashem. Be misboinen on the godless Hashem. Hashem's not big. he's not small. It's like saying he's really tall. Yeah, although the Torah says Godol, Kel Godol, Noira. But Gadlus Hashem means what it's trying to allude to is your Hashem in your world. Use whatever you need to think about that will give you an experience, some kind of emotional experience about Hashem. Everybody is so to speak like turned on by different things about Hashem. I did this one time. I asked people like, "What makes you, what impresses you about God?" Yeah, and everyone says different stuff. The thing that really blows my mind is that, you know, like when you're learning something, yeah, and you've been learning Kaseda with your Chavrusa for like 3 years. And then the first time you've actually learned about Lag BaOmer, yeah? And it happens right on Lag BaOmer. And yeah, that's clearly from the Rabbeinu Shloimeh, yeah? How did he do that? I have no idea how he could work that out. Or like you're in a bar, you know, you're reading a book in the bathroom, yeah? And you had your Chavrusa asked you a question. It's really like, you really don't understand. Then you go to the bathroom and you've been reading this bathroom book for like 4 months. And as you open it up, the answer's there for you. And you're like, how does he do that?
John, you lie by me over that. You do the same thing with the famous Mar Shabbos,
Lamed Gimel. Okay, that was the same kind of, anything, when you see a hashkacha that happened in your Seder of life, and you look back and you're like, I mean, I learned with this guy Kaseda for the past... He didn't rewrite the book.
He's Mezavik Zibugin.
Yeah, like your brain fries at that. You can't understand how he does that. That's fine. It's good to, you know, but when you think about it, you're like, wow. You just go, wow. It's like a magic trick. Don't know how you did that. Amazing. Another friend of mine was like how he thinks about Yom Kippur, how you've got, you know, hundreds of thousands of Yidden davening all together and Hashem's listening to every single one. I never thought about that, you know. When you think about the size of the universe and that's just a speck, you know, next to it, whatever it is that turns you on. So what the real Seder of his boyness is Shachus. That's real his boyness. That's what Shachus is meant. That's Shachus is designed to do this to us. That's what Shachus is about. It's very important to know that because it's very easy to, I mean, you know, as I came into Yiddishkeit, to hear people talking about, you know, the Ikur Shachris is at the end of Shemona Esrei, you make your own bakashas and you have your own relationship with Hashem, you know, and it sounds very nice, but it's not true. The Yudches Brochas are much more important than your own personal bakashas at the end. And if you learn about what Shachris is and the mechanics of how it works, you'll see that this is absolutely the Seder of his boyness. This is exactly what the Rebbe is talking about. And he doesn't mention it. He doesn't say it by name. Yeah, but it's clear that that's really what he's referring to. That's the ultimate Seder of his boyness.
The Amida?
The whole of Shachris. Not the Amida. The Amida is not his boyness. The Amida is the avoider that takes place once you've gone through all of these boyness. That's all of that in the senses. Hachana for the Shemona Esrei. Yeah. So that is the idea of his boyness, which is quite an unknown thing, but it's basically layering concepts on concepts from Russian boyne, yeah, to build, layering concepts on concepts to the point where you have some kind of emotional experience that wouldn't have been possible with just words. Like we said, keep saying again and again, the universe is so big. It's a shtickle his boyness to talk about the size of it being 90 billion light years. Then you go back and think, well, if it's 1 second to travel 186,000 miles, which is 7 times around the Earth, yeah, then you can do it from many different angles. But his boyness is the idea of layering concept on concept. Okay, the Rebbes, the Chabad Rebbes are masters of actually doing it in their Ma'amorim. That's one of the big inyanim of the Ma'amorim, is that they layer concepts on concepts to the point where you end up with some kind of experience. Okay.
That's a really beautiful explanation. How does that relate to his Odedus?
They're two very, very different things. Two very, very different things. His boydidus, you have to be careful with.
Careful to do it.
What? Because what?
Be careful to do it.
You have to be careful to do it. And when you're doing it, you have to be careful that Hashem doesn't turn into your invisible friend. That's a real danger that you have to be aware of.
It's a natural human trait.
No, but he shouldn't be an invisible friend.
God's thinking there.
All I said is that 5-year-olds have invisible friends. Yeah? You can have someone that you like to talk to. You have to be careful to make sure that Hashem doesn't turn into your pocket God and pull him out when you need him. Like, what do you think? He's just much more powerful, much more knowing, more compassionate, whatever you put on it. That's a danger of his boydedness, which you have to be careful of. You have to try and get Hashem in perspective. You can't sit in front of God like this. You're not anywhere near God if you sit like that. He doesn't exist in your mind if you can sit like that. That's not how you can sit in front of the Bnei Shalom. Impossible.
So what, you gotta get up in a suit or something and do a
skeleton? I mean, you dress Mechubad there. How would you go and dress if you had a meeting with Donald Trump? I'm not saying,
David
Amal
did
this
while he was in his bed.
The what?
David
Amal
did
his
boydedness
while he was in his bed.
Well, you're not
David Amal. Okay, you could do his boydedness when you're in your bed, for sure.
I guess I'm asking in Derech Avoda. Theoretically, you can sit back and do his boydedness. You can sit back and explore your mind.
But
his boydedness, you're saying, in Derech Avoda.
No, not then as well. Just if you're in the presence of God, yeah, you go to sleep, you have to go to sleep. When you say Shema, you shouldn't lie on your back and say Shema, you should go onto your side. But if you're really in the presence of the Rabbeinu Shloilem, you can't sit like that. I'm not saying you have to stand up like straight, but you would sit in a mechubadik way. Like when I'm with my, you know, even when you're with your father, you shouldn't sit in such a way. We're in a generation that's not so real to us, yeah? But for sure, if you're standing in front of a mechubadik person, you know, Rebbe walks in the room. You're sitting there on the couch with your feet up and the Rebbe walks in the room. Yeah, you would sit up straight. You would sit, you know.
I remember Nachman, it seems to be that this Bodhidus, like he told her doesn't to speak to Hashem like he's your good friend, specifically not in the relationship of Melech or Av or whatever, in that specific context of that hour a day.
I'm not saying you shouldn't do it at all. I'm just trying to say that there's a danger that Hashem can turn into something that he isn't. Yeah?
His Bodhidus with his Bodhidus. Maybe
you need to know. You need to have a musag of at least what Hashem isn't, yeah, an understanding that Hashem is that's there's a big difference in his boyness and his boydedness. Okay, again, I'm not saying you shouldn't be doing his boydedness, but I'm just saying don't turn it into one thing that I see a lot is that people scrimp on shachris for their his boydedness. Meaning they'll come in late for Shachris because they've been misboided. And that doesn't make any sense. It's like Rabbeinu Tam to fill in Shemona Esrei, you know, that's also not the right thing to do. That's halacha, you shouldn't do that. Why are you doing it? It's Rotzon Hashem, but the halacha is you shouldn't do it during Shemona Esrei. You should wait until after Shemona Esrei, put on Rabbeinu Tam. It's like you're missing...
After Chazor
Tashat? What?
After Chazor Tashat.
After Shachris Lagamre, when you're in Shachris, you should be in Shachris. If you're going like that, it's not stam that Chazal could have been Machayev us for anything. They could have been Machayev us for a Seder of Mishnayos, for a Seder of Gomorrah, for anything they wanted to be Machayev us for, yeah? They were Machayev us for like an hour and a half. I mean, if you daven properly, it should be at least an hour and a half for Shachris Mincha Ma'ariv. At least, yeah? For all generations. And what's the chiyuv of Torah? It's Kriyat Shema in the morning, Kriyat Shema in the evening, your yotzei, you know? It's an important thing to think about. But Shachris, from my understanding of reality, Shachris is the ultimate weapon that we have in our avodas Hashem. And that's why they made such a big thing of it. And if you treat Shachris with the cover that it deserves, yeah? And from my evaluation, that means, wait for it, 25 minutes, Pesukei Dezimra. Imagine such a thing. Yeah, meaning getting what?
Does that include korbanos?
No, no, no. 25 minutes just specific to Zim.
No korbanos.
Korbanos before that. Okay. Yeah, or at least a little bit. Like, it's better to say a little bit of. You have to say all the specific to Zim, but you can pick and choose the korbanos. I don't say all the korbanos. I say you know you have to say the tamid, you have to say ketores, brichas hashachar. Yeah, but and then I say a couple of the ezim akoyim. That's so maybe 20 minutes of korbanos, 50 minutes of korbanos. And then, if you can spend 25 minutes on Bazooka the Zimra, yeah, and really like actually be there in the words, and if Hebrew is a problem, the art scroll with the interlinear translation, yeah, you've got a really good chance of actually entering into Shema in the right way. And then, if you do that, then you've got a really good chance of entering into Shemona Esrei correctly. And if you're zeicher to that, then you've got a really good chance of actually entering into the day in the right way. And then you're in a whole different world. Your reality of the day is a different world. It's not rocket science. It's pashut. It's pashut. It's just so clear that this, you know, when you read some Shakespeare, you know, it's actually, imagine if you saw somebody reading Shakespeare, Lahavdil, at that speed. You'd think they're mad. We're talking about Divrei Tanakh, you know, open Nevuah, the highest Nevuah the world's ever known of. And we're going, brrr. 25 minutes is enough to actually process a little bit the information, and that sets you up for Birchas Kriya Shema, then Shema, then Yetzias Mitzrayim, then, just, my point is, don't throw out the, don't get the Tofel and the Ikkah mixed up. Chazal aren't simple. Yeah, the fact that they were mechayev as to this little sefer, the Siddur, is extremely relevant. You have to really take it very seriously.
It's the hardest sefer.
Sorry?
It's the hardest sefer.
It's the most amazing. After the Chumash, it's like the most halakhic sefer there is. It's unbelievable. It's unbelievable. The Siddur just pours out. And if you're zocher, I actually have a, what I do is in my Siddur, I have at the front of my siddur, I have a bunch of, you know, the simaniot, like these things. I live off these things. I love these things. So I mean, how long have I been davening properly? I've been davening properly now for like maybe, you know, say 8 to 10 years to actually taking chakra seriously. And the amount of times that I'll come out and you'll see my siddur will have, what I'll do is I'll put, if I see something in the siddur and some kind of chiddush comes to me, and I'll put a little simaniot there. And when I come back after Shabbos, I'll go to it and it will remind me, and I'll write down the thought. And an amazing Kedushim, you can be Zohar to, if you take Shabbos seriously, you can be Zohar to amazing Kedushim. Amazing Kedushim. So that's his boinoness. That's his boinoness, and it's very different to his boididus. And it's something that we, it's kind of two sides of the coin, because as sophisticated Western people, yeah, we actually, our minds can work like that really well. But because we've got all our telephones and all that stuff, our minds are like this, so it's actually very difficult to do. But we are in a good position to actually be Miss Boynen. So look, I'm going to actually... So I want to give another shiur. It's on. The thing is that we won't. I'm going to hand these out. Before I hand these out, let's start chapter 4. Yeah, and just explain a little bit the idea of begadim. That's what the Rebbe explains in chapter 4. Yeah, chapter 4 is about begadim, levushim, which is translated as garments or clothing. Okay, in Chassidus and Kabbalah, levushim are. Levushim are behavior, okay? Thought, speech, and action. So why are they called levushim? There's lots of amazing reasons. Lots of amazing reasons. And they're all magale, they all reveal amazing ideas, like very deep, true ideas. I don't know what's the most important. But the two up there, yeah, the two that you could argue about which one's the most important, in my opinion, is number one, they reveal you to another. Yeah? So when you're wearing one kind of clothing, you appear to be, that's a revelation of who you are to the other person. And when you're wearing a different kind of clothing, you appear to be something else. Number one. Number two, or it could be number one, arguably, is that clothing you put on and take off. Okay? It's up to you. You can put it on and take it off. So you can stop doing something in the middle of your walking, holding something, and you can just stop doing it. That's obvious, yeah? Mm. In the middle of speaking, you can just stop speaking, yeah? In the middle of thinking, it's more difficult to stop thinking, but you can definitely distract yourself with a different thought. If you've practiced enough time, you can even be able to still your mind. But that's already a lot of practice. But you can definitely distract yourself from thinking X. Like what I do if I get thoughts that aren't productive, then I will start like analyzing the world on a graphical level. I'll just start looking at textures and looking at patterns, and I'll start comparing this to that. And within a few seconds, literally, that machshava ra, that machshava zara has gone. You can't even remember what it was. It's so easy to do. The problem is, when a machshava ra, a machshava zara comes into our mind, we are misboinen on it. Yeah? That's really the inuit misboinen on it. And it goes, it's a downward spiral. Yeah? So we actually do misboinen all the time, lara. Yeah? That's called getting into like a knot inside. That's like going into a, when it's possible like you, some kind of bad thought comes to you, or you feel ichy, whatever it is. And then before you know it, after like an hour or two, it's like you're in such a dungeon. You know what I'm talking about? That's called hisboinenness, because you're layering in a bad way, you're layering some concepts on concepts, and it's bringing you further and further down. We do that all the time. So if you can like kind of nip it at the bud when that original feeling or thought comes in, and you can just distract yourself and go somewhere else with your thoughts, literally within a few seconds, that initial thought has disappeared and it's much gone. It's very, very, it's too simple, but it's really, it really is simple. And if you do that enough, yeah, you'll start to find that you're not smitten with bad thoughts after a while. They start to really, their intensity lessens and their frequency lessens. So that garments, we just said now, behavior means that you can do it and you can stop doing it. Okay, you begin a certain behavior and then you stop doing that behavior. And that's why we are expected, behavioral perfection is expected from every Jew. Okay? The inner world, for your emotions to be perfectly aligned with God, that's not expected of us. But perfect behavior is expected of us.
How can that be? How can we be expected of perfect behavior if our behavior are burdens of our emotions? How can it be?
Because you can trump that. Unless you're sick, unless you're actually unwell, yeah, we've said before, unless you're actually unwell
mentally,
you are always able to control your behavior. I know it doesn't seem like that, but the example I always give is of a guy who wants to smoke a cigarette. What? A guy who hasn't smoked for 6 months, he's had a terrible day, and he bought a packet of cigarettes, he's ready, you know? There's nothing you can say to him, Ephes, that would stop him from smoking that cigarette. And like you said, you're offering $1,000, $10,000 to not smoke the cigarette, gone. Not in it. Then the time is not even there. Thank you. You know? So you're always just, what's the price? You're always in control of your behavior. It's just sometimes we feel that the cost of not saying that to our wife is not worth, or we don't even make the cheshbon. If we made the cheshbon, we wouldn't say it. But right now, the pleasure of saying this cutting thing to my wife is just worth so much. Is it going to be worth the 2 days of the cold shoulder and that, etc., and the breaking of the relationship or whatever it is? Yeah, no. But right now, I'm not even thinking about that. But there's a price. And if someone jumped out of the corner and you're about to say this to her, yeah, and they offered you a bunch of money, you wouldn't do it. You wouldn't say it. It'd be very easy to not say it. So you're always in control of your behavior. Always. Masha ain't in your emotions. So just like I said, you could stop doing, saying, or thinking something, yeah? But what about, like, for example, stopping to love your mother? Let's just don't know with a bad relationship with a mother. I'm not just giving it as an example. Yeah? How can you just stop loving someone? It's not like stopping saying, it's not like stopping doing something, saying something, or thinking something. If you were given long enough time, maybe, and a lot of, you know, corrupt information, whatever it is, yeah, and you really, really worked on it, you could unlove somebody who you love. But it's much more part of who you are. That's why clothing is like clothing. You can take it off and you put it on. You understand? Whereas the midas are actually the goof of the neshama. And then things that you know are even more the goof of the neshama. Okay? So the idea of your behavior is that you're right, it's an expression of emotions. Yeah, we'll explain that in a moment. But you are able to trump the behavior. Why? Because it's something external to you. Whereas you can't trump the emotions. You can't just stop feeling something. That takes some time and some avoider. So when you have deep, visceral, palpable, whatever you want to call them, emotions, what do they want to do? What do emotions want to do or need to do?
Express.
They need to express themselves. So like we said, expression, garments are all about expression. Yeah? So they want to express themselves in thought or speech or action. That's what emotions want to do. So I actually have a little picture in here, but I'll just tell you a good, in like, I think it was the late 80s, There was this crush in a stadium in England called the Hillsborough disaster. Mm-hmm. You're probably just being born or something.
No.
What?
I know about that.
So I mean, and about nearly 100 people got killed. Yeah, and there's all the pictures of the people smushed against the perimeter fence and kids, and it was a terrible, terrible thing. And then I actually have a picture in here because it's so revealing. Is you can't really see it. But if you go online and look, type in the Hills disaster, this little picture basically was a few days later, yeah, the entire stadium, the entire football pitch was filled with like 2 feet of flowers. 2 feet of flowers, the entire pitch, 100 yards, whatever it is, yeah? Hundreds of thousands of flowers. Why? There wasn't Facebook and there wasn't WhatsApp at the time, and everybody decided to, you know, it was a thing, we're going to try and fill the stadium with flowers. What happened?
Everyone was feeling the same thing.
Even, I don't know if they were feeling the same thing, but everyone was feeling deep things.
They needed to express it.
And what'd you do? 100 people got died. You know, I'm not going to set up some kind of, thing to, you know, some type of technology that when there's a certain amount of pressure on the perimeter fence, it falls over, yeah? Maybe a couple of people decided to do that, but most people are like, I just need to do something. I just need to do something. And what's the only thing you can really do? Everyone's like, well, I suppose I'll just buy some flowers. At least I'm expressing my emotions somehow. That's a great example of how emotions are need to be expressed. If they're not expressed, that will lead to what's the word? word in my mind came to constipation, but that's not the word. What's the word? Suppression. It will be suppression, and that's going to come out in funny, you know, maybe dangerous ways later on. Okay, so emotions have to be expressed through thought, speech, and action. So the most important thing to remember about thought, speech, and action is that they're not you. Therefore, you can actually control them. The minute you think, we've said this before, the minute you think you are your behavior, then you've been what's the word?
Compromised.
Compromised. Like impossible, you can't.
Limited.
What?
Trapped.
Like you've become impotent, impossible, you've got no power. Yeah, that's not the right word.
Hijack?
No, no, it means that you can't do anything against them.
Powerless.
Powerless, thank you, powerless. You become powerless to them, yeah? Come on, it's powerless over, either way. So, that is the foundation of our entire life, is knowing that we are not our behavior. We're not our actions. We are not our speech, and we are, and this is the most important one, we're not even our thinking. Yeah? We are the one that thinks, we are the one that speaks, we are the one that acts. But we are not our thoughts, we are not our speech, we are not our actions. Creating that little distance between our behavior now puts you in the driving seat. You are now not powerless. You want to say this thing to your wife? Nice. So, just because you want to say it doesn't mean you have to say it.
But if you say that just, we are our feelings?
Sorry?
We are our feelings?
We're more our feelings than... We're not our feelings, no. But we're more our feelings than we are our behavior. We're not our feelings also. We're not even our intellect. We're, if you want to really go deep, we're our rotson. And even deeper than that, we're our oinek. Even deeper than that, we're either nothing or we're a shem. But we're not... We're it's layers. It's all relative. So when we say you're not your emotions, yeah, you're not your emotions, but you're much more your emotions than you are your behavior. So you feel like you want to like strangle your wife sometimes, yeah, this happens. I mean, it probably people know someone who's felt like that one time, maybe. Yeah?
Not to say it.
We don't say. But, or you want to like throttle a child, like you've had kids, you have teenage children, yeah, and you can go through emotions with teenage children that are like. They can just be so horrible. I mean, the way I do it now, so I go, Baruch Hashem, it hasn't happened in a long time, but one of my kids, do something wrong, or something very wrong, or a lot of things very wrong, again and again and again and again. And then you I'll go into my room, my wife will be there, and I'll say, I hate him. I hate him. Yeah? And it's like, the first time I did that, she was like, just say that about your child. And after I said, I'm like, okay, gosh, I go back outside and I'm cool with him again. Why? Because emotions need to express themselves. I hate my son, but that really allows you to get that constriction out of you. Don't say it to him, but to go into your bedroom and to say it with real, really say it. Yeah? You can go back out. It, literally, you just need to say it twice, maybe, even once, twice. Maximum of three times, and you're a new person. You're ready to go back out there and start thinking rationally and talking to him rationally, etc. Yeah, that's a very helpful tip, Marmish. So, but you can't help. You cannot say this thing to him, but you can't help feeling how you're feeling. So that's when we say you're not your emotions. You're more your emotions than you are your behavior. You have greater shlita over your behavior than through your emotions. And the irony is. The irony or the kunz, whatever you want to call it, the trick is that the more you're sholed over your emotions, the more you're sholed over your behaviors, what happens?
Start to be able to control your emotions a little bit more.
It feeds back in to the system, and you start to identify with good behavior. And then all of a sudden, your emotions start to move into alignment with goodness. Also,
so you change your behavior, then your emotions
follow.
Feed off of that, and then you start having the urge to do that behavior.
And that's called an upward spiral. That's the biggest. That's probably the overall picture that the Tanya paints. Stop being a baby, get in control of your behavior, and now you'll start seeing very quickly. The whole thing will start moving up. And it won't take that long. It won't take that long until your emotions start to become aligned with the Rabbeinu Shloim. It really is. If you align your behavior with mitzvahs, then it won't take that long until your emotions start to fall in line. Okay, now that said, I want to give a different share. Okay. We haven't got enough paper. You don't need it. I'm going to just take one and pass it on. A minute. And this is for you to remember this, because what we're going to say... Shamil. what we're going to say, this is one of my favorite shiur. Just take maybe, Liza, you don't need to say, this is just, I remember, if anybody wants, they can make a copy of it. But I'm going to try and explain this. So, what's the symbol of evil? In not just in our culture, in like nearly all cultures. Oh, I didn't see you said that, Baruch Hashem. The symbol of Ra in this world is the snake. Yeah.
The doctor has the snake.
So that was from Moshe Rabbeinu. Yeah. So there's inyanim. So I went to work with all my knowledge. I spent a lot of time learning about all kinds of stuff, and I've spent over the years a lot of time learning about like natural history and biology and stuff like that. And I spent a lot of time thinking about the snake, and I created a lesson. It's 12 lessons. Some of them you could literally write an entire book on. Some of them are, you know, a good chapter or whatever, but we'll go through them quickly. But such deep...
12 steps.
So?
12 steps.
Kind of, if you get this really clear, yeah, you won't need the 12 steps. So, okay, so the Indian of the snake, yeah? Snake is a very miyuchadik animal. How do you say that?
Unique,
thank you. Very unique animal, yeah? And it's got a lot of the unique features that are just unbelievable insights into understanding what Ra actually is. What is Ra? Okay, so I wrote at the top here that there's 200,000 types of animals in existence, and serpentes is the genus of a snake. Okay, and there's these 12 features that we're gonna run through, and we're gonna explain what kind of insight they give into evil. It's muiridik. So firstly, the snake is one. It's just a pus, a single line. Has a split tongue. It's an obligate carnivore. It means it can only exclusively eat meat. It can't eat anything else. It can eat eggs as well, but it can't eat any kind of vegetation, which is quite rare. Also cats, I think, are like that.
Isn't the curse of the snake that it eats dust?
Sorry?
Isn't the curse of the snake to eat
offer? Yeah.
It tastes like dust, no?
Huh?
Tastes like dust.
Okay. We'll get there as well.
You eat dust all day, but you can only survive.
All beings are made out of dust, right?
Okay, it sheds its skin, yeah? It's cold-blooded. That's obviously not unique to snakes, but it slithers. It eats prey whole. You've got two kinds of snakes. Every snake falls into either the category of a viper or of a constrictor. Either they inject poison or they crush or
strangulate.
Not strangulate. That's the what's
constrict.
The
constrict.
Yeah, sorry, but it's like to
suffocate.
Whatever. Yeah. They hiss. They've got poor vision. Not all of them are nocturnal, but most of them are nocturnal. And they're earthbound. They're on the floor. Yeah, generally. Okay. So these are the inyanim that we learned just really beautiful ideas from. Okay, the inyan of it being one, and that was really its punishment. It lost its arms and legs, yeah, and it's going to slither on the floor. So the arms and legs of the whole tsura of an odin, yeah, is meramez to yudke vavke. Okay, the yud and the hay is the head, and then the vav is the torso. And then the lower hay could be considered the legs, maybe, or the arms, however it is. But the yud kei vav kei corresponds to the tsuras of the goof, yeah? The fact that the snake became one...
It's just above.
Huh?
It's just above.
It's just a single line, yeah? Is merames to the inyan of the ultimate... This is the first point. The concept of Ra is that you think you're God. You think that you're one. Just like Paro said, Ani va'afsi oid. There's just me. I'm all that exists. That would be the ultimate level of Ra. Yeah, whenever we do an Aveira, we basically are testifying to the fact that I'm more real than the Bnei Shalom. That's what an Aveira is. And Aveira says, my agenda is more real, more choshev than your agenda, Roshim. And you'll sit out for the mean, just for the moment while I do this Aveira. That's what an Aveira is. An Aveira is a feel, and the ultimate level would be a feeling of oneness in yourself. That's why Haman needed Mordechai. Because if it was just about having a lot, yeah, then what's one more little yid? He's got the whole of Persia bowing to him, yeah? The whole of the known world bowing to him. But he was after a yichud. He was after a yichud of Ra. If you're after a yichud of Ra, then all of that is nothing because you're missing a link. You ever had a dance? You know, sometimes you have a dance around and sure, whatever it is, and like some guy drops out and there's a hole in the circle and everyone feels a bit uncomfortable and you want to try and like, you know, get it closed up. Yeah, that's the Inyan. That's the first most important concept of Ra. That on the ultimate level, Ra believes that it exists to the exclusion of everything else, including all other people and the Rebbeinu Shlom, obviously. The Rebbeinu Shlom is the first one to go. He's the first one to go. And that could really be expressed as a person dunning his pleasure as more choshev than your pleasure. So that sounds like, well, that's kind of normal. But look, put it to the nth degree, and we spoke about this, I think. Like I always talk about Ted Bundy, Yimach Shemoy. Yeah, a rapist, serial killer, psychopath, Russia, Marusha, Mamash from like the 80s, yeah? Killing and raping and doing all kinds of crazy stuff. He was at the point where he said, my pleasure is so real that I don't care if you have to go through the ultimate pain. That's not in the cheshbon bichlal. That's the ultimate level of Ra. Where my pleasure becomes so real to me that I will put the next person through pain for my pleasure. Yeah? And like we said before, a tzaddik, a real tzaddik, wouldn't even get up off a less comfortable chair to move on to a more comfortable chair if there was no toeles in his avodas Hashem. He'd be like, I wouldn't even put myself out for my own pleasure, let alone anybody else. My pleasure to me is an irrelevant part of the, it needs to be done. Yeah, and then like we say, like, you know, you need to go to the mikveh, and there's only a cold mikveh, and you're like, it's hot, it's cold. The tzaddik's like, you need to go to the mikveh. There's one mikveh, I'm going to the mikveh. There's no cheshbon about my pleasure. The more cheshbon about my pleasure there is, the more we have to try and work that out. The more we have to get back to the behavioral perfection, and eventually that will tie back in, and our pleasure will start to become less and less important to us. And imagine how amazing your marriage would be. Imagine what your home would be like if you didn't care about your own pleasure. Can you imagine? You would never ever say the wrong thing to your wife. Or you might say like the wrong thing, but it would be for sure not for coming from a bad place. Imagine how perfect your life would be if you didn't have your, it's your pleasure that gets you into all trouble. So the more real your pleasure is to you, the more kind of dislocated and separate you are from the world, to the point where you become, in a sense, one. Echad yachid miyuchad. That's the inyan, the first inyan of the snake. That's what we learn from the fact that it's just one line. Okay. It has a split tongue, meaning that it's panemius, even though its goof is one mamash, its inner world is absolutely fragmented and separate. Hafrada, that's the inyan of klipa. So it has a split tongue. Its inner world is actually fragmented, meaning it looks at everything. It doesn't see the big picture. Ra doesn't see the big picture. In the world of Ra, everything is a dislocated, fragmented, separate thing.
That's what Yavan is, because it's Yud and Vav Nun, three straight lines, or they'll never meet. So it, like Yavan believes that everything's like separated and not connected.
That's great. Tzion, there's also the union of Yud Vav Nun. Oh, yeah, it's taken
the tzaddik before Yavan, which you get. If Yavan had the tzaddik, then it would be good. Tzion.
That's Tzion. That's the union of Shem Atat Tzaddik. Tzaddik Atta.
That's the whole idea. They want to be one. They can't have the tzaddik because what someone else is going to do to the person.
Oh, you're like link it into the union one. Very good. Very good. That's excellent. Great. So anyway, so this union of a split tongue is maramas to the fact that the world of Ra is everything is compartmentalized and separate. That doesn't mean, by the way, in the world of Kedusha, also everything is separate. You have to separate everything out. Yeah, like with Bikurim. How do you make, what's the mitzvah of Bikurim to make it beautiful? Is to separate the different species with leaves of, you know, leaves of figs or plant, whatever it is, yeah? To have it separate. But the separation is almanas to see the cohesive unity. There's not an inyan of everything is separate unto itself. Yeah, that's Ra. Ra looks at everything as separate. We see boundaries. Yeah, what's, well, chesed, like that's Yishmael. Chesed without boundaries is Geneva, is theft and sexual immorality, yeah? There's no boundaries. So there's very real boundaries, but we see the big picture. Yeah, Ra doesn't say it. That's my ramus to the snake's forked tongue. We do that in my house now when there's a, when you say to, it's like a little sign in my house. It works, it's been for years now. When someone, when you say something to someone, like if you give tohocha to someone, yeah? And then the way the snake in the Gemara in Tainus, yeah? The way, do you remember the Gemara? When they say to the snake, you know, the Ari kills and eats, the wolf kills and eats, but you just kill and what do you do? So he says, it's just like the Baal Lashon Hara. Yeah, the Baal Lashon Hara puts his Ra in and he goes away. He doesn't get any toelis from it. It's just for the sake. Not that the Ari and the wolf, maybe it says a dove as well there, but an Ari and a wolf, they kill to eat. Yeah, but you just kill for the sake of killing. So what happened? They came to the snake with some tochocha and he was like, look at him. Look at the Baal Lashon Hara. He couldn't take it himself. So when someone does something wrong in our house and I'll say to the kid, why did you do that? And they'll be, well, she just did that. And we'll go like this, like that. That's the sign. Yeah, I've explained it enough that when you go like that, they're like, yeah. Meaning, so what? I understand, yeah? But put this on yourself. Put it there. It's very good, it works. Yeah, that's the sign of the house. Obligate carnivore means it can only eat meat, yeah? Now that is another very big expression of Ra. Why is it called a higher Ra? Why do Chazal call a predatory, carnivorous animal a higher Ra? They don't have Bechira Bechlal. What's the difference in a tiger and a cow? Cow's programmed to eat grass. Tiger's programmed to eat meat. Where's the Ra here? You with me?
Predator, one's a predator, one's, I guess...
One is, so obviously an animal...
One needs to kill to survive.
So that's Ra. Not that the animal, an animal is just an animal. Tov and Ra isn't applicable to animals, yeah? But what Chazal are teaching us is the definition of Ra is when my life takes precedence over your life to the point where I will take your life to further my life. I'm more real than you. That's a higher Ra. That's what a higher Ra says. A tiger looks at a gore, whatever thing it eats, and it says...
It can't control that.
They can't control it. They're not Ra, but they're called a higher Ra because that's the inyan of Ra. The inyan of Ra is that I will take your life to continue further in my life.
There's no kosher animal that does that.
Absolutely. Yeah. And that's what Rav Manis explained one time. He said, why was it the tzivui in Gan Eden was, don't eat, you can eat from all the other trees, just don't eat from the Eitz HaDaas Tova Ra. Why did he have to say you can eat from all the other trees? Well, obviously. So he said, no. Who says that your life is worth more than taking fruit from a tree? That's an assumption that you've just made. Who says that's true? Your life is more choshev than a fruit? I mean, we just go, yeah. But that's only because we've been conditioned to say that. So that would have been Adam HaRishon, according to my Rebbe, would have sat down and starved to death if he wasn't told you could eat from all the other trees of the... That's how good he was. Yeah? The opposite of a higher Ra, Mamash. And that's at the end of days when the Nevuah from Ishaya, when the wolves will lay with them, etc., etc. Okay. And it can only eat another life. That's the point of an obligate carnivore. It's even more. Okay, it sheds its skin. This is Moiridic. So... The big difference between animals and human beings, this is the ultimate difference, is that human beings wear clothes and animals don't. The clothes of the animals are built into them. They can't change their behavior. We can. That is a symbol for the ultimate difference between human beings and animals. That we have shlita over our behavior and they don't. Yeah? And that's my mom is in the fact they don't wear clothes. They are clothes. Their clothes are built in. But not so obviously as the snake. Because the snake actually sheds its skin. Meaning its clothes come from the inside. Yeah, where else do they come from? They're grown from the inside. And the fact that at one point it slithers out of its skin and has new skin, that shows you that Ra is utterly identified with behavior. Thought, speech, and action.
Also crabs.
Hmm?
Crabs.
Crabs do the same thing? They leave their shell. The Inyan is the same Inyan that if the garments come from within,
they are the Klipa.
Hmm?
They are the Klipa themselves.
They are the Klipa. And that means that they are absolutely identified with their behavior.
Yeah, so even when their behavior changes, which is the clothing, the emotions stay the same. It's still the same snake. So it changed its clothes, but it's still, it didn't impact its emotions.
I hear what you're saying. So that is this idea of being identified with your behavior is the most not powerless. It's the thing that makes you the most ineffective in your Yiddishkeit. The more you are identified with your thinking, with your speaking, with your actions, the less ability you have to be righteous and to serve God. Okay. It's cold-blooded. This is great. You've got the option. Cold-blooded doesn't actually mean it has cold blood. Cold-blooded means it doesn't have, what's it called? Write it down.
It's called
homeostasis. Homeostasis, thank you. It doesn't have homeostasis. Homeostasis means it works out. We wear clothes, but wherever we go, our body kind of works out temperature. That's sweating and panting and stuff and shivering and goosebumps. The body adjusts itself to the temperature. We work it out, Whereas a cold-blooded animal doesn't do that, so it has to go and do external acts, like it has to go into the sun, it has to go and... But the point is that its body, it can't control it. It's a product of its environment. It's the difference between being a thermostat and being a thermometer. The tzaddik is a thermostat. Yeah, like Yosef. Yeah, and like Yaakov. Yeah, love and gati. He's a thermostat, meaning he could be for 14 years and the 21 years, whatever it is, in the house of Russia. Yeah, and he was shomer Torah mitzvahs the whole time. Why? Because he was a thermostat. And I bet you a lot of people around him also did Torah mitzvahs because of him. Whereas the Russia's a thermometer. Whatever environment he goes into, if it's hot, he goes up. If it's low, he goes down. This is a whole shiur in itself. Yeah, it's like a difference between a cedar tree and grass, long grass. Just whatever way the wind blows. Yeah. Whereas if we stand strong, a cedar doesn't matter which way the wind is blowing. Okay. It slithers. Yeah. This is just kind of cute. We're called Yashakel. Yeah. Yisrael is Yashakel, means we're straight. And the whole Indian of the snake is it slithers, yeah? When you talk to somebody whose mind is like all, and everything you say, and they're going like this the whole time, it's just like, leave me alone.
Even though it wants to be one straight line, it's not. It ends up being...
What?
Even though the snake's like, it wants to be one straight line.
Yeah, and to go there, it wiggles around.
So you can't go straight at it.
Yeah.
He wants to be a straight line, but he can't even do that.
Yeah. It eats prey whole. This is very geschmack. It eats prey whole means, I'll say this really quickly, it really demands a lot more time, but if you could catch it on the recording or if you can remember it, it's worth a lot. The Inyan of Michael Ben Droisai on Shabbos. Yeah, we spoke about this? I said this before? Michael Ben Droisai, is the level of food that you're hired for cooking on Shabbos. Like, for example, if you just take a piece of meat and there's a can, you got like that. Yeah, you're over on Muksa, but you're not over on Bishul if you just... go like that, nothing happened, yeah? So it has to get cooked to a minimal shear. Michael Ben Droisai is a machlokes if it's a third cooked or half cooked, yeah? Who was Ben Droisai?
Robert Dishman.
Huh? He was a bandit, yeah? Bendroisai was a bandit, yeah? So, Chazal said that he was always on the run, and he would cook his food to the bare minimum, because he was always on the run, until it was just edible, then he'd eat it and go weiter, yeah? So I can't imagine that that tasted pretty. I can't imagine that tasted very good. The minute it's edible, yeah, it's not going to make you sick. That's Michael Bendroisai. That's the whole Indian of Shabbos. Shabbos, there's two reasons why you eat. One is for oineg, one is for koyach. One is an end, one is a means to an end. Like I said, this is really a whole shiur, but so excuse the injustice I'm doing it to it. There's ends and means, yeah? Klipa's means to an end, and Kedusha is an end. Eating on Shabbos, Shabbos is an end. Shabbos is tachlis ha-shamayim v'aretz, yeah? It's tachlis, which is oineg. That's why it's called oineg Shabbos. To oineg, you never do, like, why do you like pleasure? Like pleasure. There's no reason why you like pleasure. Pleasure's the end. Pleasure's the tachlis. All the other stuff is reasons for the pleasure. But pleasure doesn't have a reason. It's well beyond reason. It's the end. So Shabbos is tachlis ha-shamayim v'aretz. It's the end point. It's not like the idea of relaxing on Shabbos so that you can go back into the week is absolutely not correct. The rest on Shabbos is for the rest on Shabbos. It's not to give you koyach for the rest of the week. Shem did not need koyach to go back to rest of Shabbos.
The week is the means to Shabbos.
Absolutely. Shabbos is the end of the week. It's not to give you koyach. It might do that, like I'll put lemaisa, yeah, but that's not what it's about. And you're not allowed to prepare on Shabbos for after Shabbos. That's halacha. Yeah? So Michael Bendroisai, the question is, Chazal, two questions. Number one, you didn't tell me if it's a third or a half. Just say it's a third or a half. Why Michael Bendroisai, number one? Number two, why are you putting the words of this Rasha in my mouth and in the mouth of Yidden and the Bate Midrashim from until the end of time? Why would you do that? Why should we say the name of a Rasha over and over? Because it teaches you the essence of Shabbos. That's Asa. To cook on Shabbos, to eat on Shabbos for Koyach is Asa. Shabbos is an end unto itself. That's the whole point, yeah? Everyone's with me?
Yeah.
That's why Droisai is to be drisa, is to tread over, yeah? Doris means to tread over. It's not something choshev in itself. It's just a means to an end. That's the inyan of eating prey whole. It doesn't get any pleasure from its food. You don't get pleasure from swallowing things whole. The pleasure is in chewing. That's the inyan of the snake eating everything whole. Yeah, it's everything's a means to an end. There's no end, yeah? That's why the tzaddik is called Shabbos, because his whole life is an end unto itself. Like when they came to the Kotzker Rebbe and they said to him, someone burst into his office and said, you know, the train from Krakow to whatever has been completed, like all excited, it's going to shave off hours and hours from the journey. And the Rebbe turned around to him and said, what's the rush? Okay, a viper or a viper or constrictor, we'll finish off quickly now. Viper or constrictor, meaning that Ra comes either from inside or it comes from outside, meaning you have things to deal with. We have emotions that pop out of nowhere to deal with. Yeah, and then we have situations that surround us that we have to deal with. Okay. Hissing is the inyan of noise, rash. Which is Rash and Russia are the same oisius. The inyan of Rash is silence in Hebrew is doim, yeah, which is loshen dumb. How do you receive tochocha from someone? If someone gives you tochocha, how is it makabel? There's only one way, silence. The minute you say, yeah, but the minute you start talking, it can't come in. Silence is, it's actually not just silence, it's the letters dalad mem are always what allows a transferal from one to another. Yeah? So dalad mem, dam, is doim, is silence. Dam, blood, is the chomer that connects avir to the bisrei guf. Yeah, blood brings the oxygen to the halkei guf. Hadoim raglov. Yeah, Hashem's footstool. That's the interface between heaven and earth, Hashem and the world. Also, mem dalad backwards. Yeah, mem dalad mida is the midas. Yeah, the esamidas, like the spheres that connects Hashem to this world. And also, mida, which is like shiurim, like measurements, is what allow the Torah to exist in our world. If it wasn't for midas, there would be no Torah. The Torah couldn't enter into this world. The fact that the Gemara is always trying to establish what's the mida of this, what's the shiur, yeah? That allows the Torah to kind of stick to this world. So dalad mem, or silence, is the interface between one and another. Rash is the opposite. When there's a lot of rash, when there's a noise, yeah, that's like a barrier. It doesn't allow that exchange. And that's, by the way, a side point, why when we say Haman on Purim, we make a lot of rash, because we don't want to be makabel any of that. Rash is the barrier to being makabel. So the inyan of the hiss, yeah, the hiss is a, if you look it up online, you'll see it's all to do with, the most profound noise. Poor vision, it doesn't see.
What do you mean it has to do with the profound?
the concept of a hiss is the opposite of yeah, is the archetypal noise. And you'll see if you look at that visually, it looks like this. Where was it? Looks like a line. So it's poor vision, meaning it actually uses its sense of smell more than hearing. But with hearing, there's much more wiggle room than when you see something. When you see something, you believe it. Yeah, when you hear something, you have to take it. When you see something, so you know it. When you hear something, you have to believe it. There's less, it's less, less obvious. Nocturnal means it's more connected to the night than it is to the day. That's the powers of that's the powers of Ra Bichlal. And earthbound, meaning it's mamash on the floor. It's the lowest of all the creatures. So anyway, so that was the reason why I went into that. Is because we spoke about Begadim, yeah? And this shir in itself, and that's why I printed it out, because you can look through it, and it's really important. Again, like I said, you could write pages and pages on each of these little paragraphs. But we to get this together from Tanya's years and years, because it's all spread out throughout the entire... All of these inyanim are in Tanya. They're spread out all over the place, so I just thought I'd give it over... by itself, but that's we'll leave on there. The biggest, the most important thing that I know of to serve Hashem is creating that separation between you and your behavior, meaning that you are the one who behaves, you are not the behavior, and that will give you a lot of that will put you in a really solid place to be able to put it together. And like I said, Hashem set everything up in our favor. He really wants us to be masliach. So when you open a small hole, he like rips it open like the Pesach in the Beis Hamikdash, yeah? Why? That's how it's set up. If you can start to behave properly, yeah? And that's the easiest thing to do. Make that separation between you and your behavior and start to behave properly. You'll find you're on the way. You're kimat already there, yeah? Shkoyach.